This is episode 503. The carefree or risk-free approach to taking supplements to solve your health problems might be causing more problems than it's fixing. What do I mean? Well, each human, based on their genetics, they process supplements differently in their body, which is why one person will think, this supplement is the best thing to ever happen to me, and the next person will said supplement is a scam. So the question is, how do you know what to take for your body and your genetics? Well, this is exactly what today's conversation is about, with a PhD scientist in molecular and cellular pharmacology who is helping you to remove the guesswork from your supplement and medication protocols. This chat dives into iron and nutrient deficiencies, anemia, mental health, supplement education, and psychedelics. It's a really good episode with an awesome guest, so let's do it. Even as a scientist and nutritionist, I was secretly trapped in binge eating and hooked on sugar. And let's be real, the so-called solutions can feel overwhelming. Calorie counting, restrictive diets, weight loss pills, surgery, and even injections. I'm Maddie Lansdowne, and the truth is, more nutrition facts aren't the answer. It's understanding why we eat the way we do. And you don't need to be perfect to achieve great health either. That shift changed everything for me, and now I share it here as the host of the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast, where it's my mission to help 1 million people break free from the yo-yo diet cycle for good, by bringing you the conversations that really matter in nutrition, health, and psychology. And I'm not afraid to challenge mainstream health advice when it doesn't stack up. Are you ready? Let's begin. What's up, my healthy friends? Today's guest is not your average supplement hype guy. Dr. Tyler Pansner is a molecular pharmacologist who ditched the lab, similar to myself actually by ditching the lab, to help people decode their health through genetic testing. We're talking real bio-individuality here, not blood types or food trends or the latest diet hack, but actual gene mutations that can explain why your healthy supplements might not be doing anything or even possibly making your health worse. He's helped people finally sleep better, think more clearly, finally stop guessing about what to actually take and do with their health. So Tyler, mate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really excited to be hopefully shifting some perspectives, right, regarding this crazy, overwhelming, contradictory world of holistic health, natural supplements. It's overwhelming and confusing for a lot of people, right? And there's not a lot of people out there trying to add that nuance, as you mentioned, not the typical supplement promoter, right? Because everyone says that this one thing or that one thing is the key to everything, when in reality, it's a lot more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I guess with the science background as well, is that you realize how incredibly complex these systems are that we walk around with every day. And the idea that just one vitamin or one mineral in isolation can solve all of these problems sounds great for marketing.
Yeah, it does.
So, but I'm curious about your story. So I've listened to a bunch of your stuff, and you've been on Simland and Lucas's podcast, and both those guys have been here as well. And you talked about your own struggles with anxiety, brain fog, insomnia. The thing I'm curious about is, what were you doing to try and fix those things before you understood the genetics? Like, what were you trying that wasn't working?
Yeah, no, great question. For me, I tried a lot of those typical calming supplements. Like, I remember I tried an ashwagandha supplement, right? And that really messed me up. It really tanked my cortisol a lot. And we could dive more into that. But see, a lot of people get harmed by that because it is so powerful at lowering that cortisol. And for me, it helped me sleep. But I woke up feeling so off, so flat overall, because you need that cortisol in the morning to get up and have that pep in your step, right? I was trying that. I was trying things like CBD oil, and these things helped a little bit for me. But the main thing for me was realizing that it was actually a lot of the foods that I was consuming that was adding to that stimulation for me. So these are what I call excitatory foods. And it depends on the person, of course, right? So what I'm going to say does not mean these foods are bad for everyone, right? That'd be a great soundbite coming up. But you know, we got to be balanced with our statements here. But I'm very genetically sensitive to sulfur and histamine. So I would be eating foods for dinner like garlic, onions, tomatoes. That would be raising histamine in my body. And for you guys listening, you may think of histamine and think of like allergies, like antihistamines. Those medications lower histamine. Allergies raise histamine. Histamine is also an excitatory neurotransmitter. It wakes up the brain. It promotes wakefulness. That's why they prescribe antihistamines for sleep. Like, Like think about Benadryl, right? Or NyQuil. It like knocks you out. So I was eating foods that raised my histamine. That was a big factor for me, not just for my insomnia, but for my anxiety, for my brain fog, for my headaches. And this is why I really try to educate people around systems. Us having a research background, molecular background, we understand cells work by pathways. It's not like there's just one sleep gene or one sleep pathway. There's a lot of gas pedals that rev up the brain and a lot of emergency brakes that slows things down.
Yeah, as you described that, what it made me think of is like your classic person that does get a huge result from taking one supplement or from doing one thing. And I guess the incorrect belief that like this was the answer, or that they just could have been, like you just described, genetically sensitive to that particular requirement or supplement. And they are, you know, the one in a million.
Well, exactly. Because these supplements, right? I'll say the supplements are band-aids, right? You could take a calming supplement and get relief even if it's not the ideal fit for you, right? So when I talk about using genetics to really fine-tune what someone actually needs, just because you don't have a mutation that means you can't make as much melatonin at night, it doesn't mean that a melatonin supplement won't help you sleep, right? Like just because you sleep better taking ashwagandha, there's no genetics for ashwagandha, right? It's not a natural vitamin that we have, right? Yeah. It interacts with our systems. So it's not having the perfect right thing doesn't mean it's not going to work, right? So again, it's like, oh, my sleep issues were an ashwagandha deficiency. Well, not really, right? It could be a cortisol issue, which again, certain foods, certain thoughts, you know, like for me, like last week I got some Greek food, very high in garlic and onions.
Delicious, right?
Oh my God, delicious. But I ate it. And what do you know? Once again, I got a headache and I was a little revved up that evening. I've gotten a lot better. It doesn't affect me as much. But when you're talking about genetics, I can work on myself. But no matter what, I'm still sensitive because it's not a nutrient deficiency. It's a hardwired genetic mutation. So I needed to take like a triple dose of CBD, a double dose of melatonin so I could get to bed.
Yeah,
because again, that night I knew why it was happening, but I had to offset. So for people that are winding themselves up, whether it's work stress or the wrong foods or excitatory supplements, we could dive more into that. You're going to have to cut through that fog. I had to calm myself down from like level 5, right? But if you're just level 1 or 2, right? You don't need as much of these things. So as much as I'm a supplement junkie, I love them. I like being data-driven and highly intentional.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the wellness / medical industry obviously discovered genetics however long ago, and then it was all about genetics, and then it became about epigenetics, and a lot of people are starting to really open up to this idea that it's how we engage with our genes that switch them on and off. And the ashwagandha is a good example because it's like we don't have a deficiency of ashwagandha.
We have an excess of cortisol, right?
right yeah. Totally. And it makes me think of cancer therapy too. It's like you don't have a deficiency of chemotherapy, right? That's not why you have cancer. So all of that to say, that epigenetic piece, like where's the interplay between, for people that are listening, like the genetic code that's sort of there and hardwired forever versus the epigenetic sort of situation you can create?
Yeah, great question. And you just worded it very well. You know, the genetic code is locked. It's never changing, right? The only time it changes if you start to get cancer, right? Like after you're born, like it's not changing less, but the body will kind of clean that up most of the time. You know, more and more I hear people saying how, oh, don't do genetic testing because the genes may not even be on, or the genes don't matter because it matters what's turned on and off by your environment. And it sounds good in a vacuum, but when you really understand the molecular biology, it doesn't make much sense. I'll be the first to admit genetics are not everything, right? They're just one piece of the equation. But when people say turning the genes on or off, how does that happen? It happens with methylation. People talk about MTHFR, right? No one will shut up about that gene, right?
Yeah, it's the most famous gene.
The most famous gene that'll cure all your issues if you take my test and take this one supplement. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm not that type of genetics guy. But the methylation is what turns it on or off. Who's doing the methylation? Proteins and enzymes that are made by genes, right? So people don't understand, like when you have MTHFR mutations or MTRR or AHCY or mutations in these methylation genes, it's affecting your body's ability to methylate, right? So it's kind of like your genetics can dictate your epigenetic capabilities. The nature dictates the nurture, right? They interplay.
There
was a new study that came out. It was showing they were protecting children in the raised in the same household, full-blooded siblings, same school, same household, same everything. They were doing complex genetic analysis on them. They were showing that genetics played a massive role in their intelligence, in their ability to learn. But they were also showing how a lot of your genes talk to your environment and your environment talks back. And, you know, people will say, well, don't get your genes tested. I did a debunk for, I don't even know what her background was, but she was so off. She was on a big podcast. You know, don't get them checked because you don't know if they're on or off. And I'm like, okay, well, yes, your genes can get turned up or down based on your environment, right? But let's just take the vitamin D receptor, for example. That is how every cell in your body detects vitamin D. Every cell in your body has that receptor. There is absolutely no possibility ever that every cell in your body turns off that gene. Because then you would completely starve your cells. I think vitamin D is one of the most important signaling pathways. It's the master hormone of the body. It is so incredibly important. So people say, oh, don't get these genes tested. We could see that your vitamin D receptor is mutated. You can't detect vitamin D as well. But what if it's all turned off? You see what I'm saying? The cells would die. Like, we would not even have life if they just cut off everything, right? So, well, yes, genetics is not a perfect type of testing. Well, guess what? Epigenetics isn't either, right? And this is what gets into the conversation of multi-omics, genomics, epigenomics, proteomics, where you study protein expression, transcriptomics, where you study mRNA expression, even exposomics, a new one I've been getting familiar with. That's your environment, what you're exposed to throughout your life. So in the future, we're going to have all these layered on top of each other. In the future, there's not going to be just a genetics company or just they're all going to be layered. They're all different pieces of the equation. So it's ironic. Most of the people that say genetics don't matter or epigenetics is all that matters, they pretty much never have any education in genetics, right? But it's a lot easier to say when you don't understand genetics for a general health coach to say, oh yeah, just live a healthy life, limit your stress, eat organic food and sleep good. Well, guess what? 95% of my clients, they do all those things. They still feel like crap, right? Most of us in the holistic space, we take care of our bodies. Why do people still feel like crap if it's all about epigenetics, right? So I'll never say it's either or. Anyone that tries to say this one thing is the answer to anything, or this one thing everyone shouldn't pay attention to or should ignore, it's kind of a red flag because there's probably a sale waiting on the other end of that, right? Because in reality, everything affects everything.
Yeah, totally. It makes me think of like many of my clients that have, you know, often been dieting for 10, 20, 30 years and have been through significant periods where they're doing everything right. You know, like they're doing the workouts, they're doing the diets, they're trying to lower their stress and nothing is budging. You know, the weight's not moving. And so, yeah. And then they often go down a path of just beating up on themselves for not being good enough, or they're in front of health practitioners, which are just gaslighting them.
Oh, that I just had a crazy client call that was just being abused from Australia's cardiologist. He had a heart attack and just literally the abuse, I would classify it by like how he was being spoken to, just like some of the worst abuse that I've heard. And it's crazy. Crazy, wow. Because there's a lot of big egos, especially with the white coats in conventional medicine. But to be honest, you know, when I say I left conventional medicine, I left that traditional career path, as you did as well. But I think you can agree, it's not that all of conventional is bad and we don't need any big pharma, right? Sure. There's net benefits to this. But I think people fail to realize that holistic health supplements, they're a much bigger industry than pharmaceuticals by market value. And they are not regulated at all. And I'm a massive fan of supplements, but it's the complete Wild West. I think people forget how these supplement companies are still companies. They're still businesses. They're driven by profits. And that's not to bash anyone that owns a supplement company. I don't have my own, not yet, right? But when I do launch one, guess what? These are for-profit companies, because that's the point. You know, you're not going to open a company just to use your time and not make any money, right? So it's not to bash on either side here, but at the end of the day, the supplement industry makes a lot more money than pharmaceuticals and is completely unregulated. And that's why I'm on a mission as a pharmacologist by training. There's not many of us that are trained in pharmacology fighting the good fight on the holistic side. There's just so much crazy misinformation and outlandish claims. And honestly, doctors and coaches or experts, right, that don't even know how supplements work, completely messing people up because they don't know that glutathione supplement can cause a sulfur reaction. They don't know that curcumin supplement can make someone anemic or make someone deficient in copper. They don't know these things. They're just saying, huh, this says lowers inflammation. You're inflamed, take it. Oh, this one here says mood support. Your mood's not good. Take this. But how is it working in your body? Is that a step you need supported? Are the supplements interacting with each other? Are they interacting with your foods? Are they interacting with your medications, right? This is all the interactions that I really don't see proper education around that is really important, whether you're prescribing or you're not.
There's a couple of things that you just mentioned, and I want to go down the path of chelators as well.
Yeah.
But first, you mentioned, you know, fighting the good fight on the holistic space. But something that comes up in my mind as someone that worked in hospitals before and has been in that world, something that comes up for me is, at what point is using mainstream medicine and the amazing resource that it is for research and self-discovery with our genetics, then prescribing 15 different supplements? At what point is holistic health now just medicine disguised as holistic health?
Yeah, it's like poly green pharmacy, right?
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of functional medicine, you know, naturopathics are kind of going towards. And I think you're absolutely right, because to me, a drug by definition is anything that alters physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Using that logic, magnesium is a drug. It alters physiology, right? Me as a pharmacologist, I really don't see drug versus supplement. They're all pharmacological tools, right, that interact with our body. You know, use the curcumin supplement, for example, right? There are several patented, trademarked, chemically modified, they'll chemically modify the curcumin to make it much more bioavailable. So if you have a curcumin, you know, you have the root that like we normally get naturally, but that's barely absorbed. We'll put black pepper in it to boost the absorption 3,000%. We'll chemically modify it for 15,000% more absorption. Is that still considered a natural supplement when you are artificially making it absorbed at levels that honestly nature didn't intend to? Right? I mean, what do you think about that, right? Like when is it no longer considered a supplement?
Well, so when it comes to food, because I work with a lot of people that have like binge eating issues or sugar addiction type issues, right? And so one of the things that the mental frameworks that helps people figure out how to make decisions at the supermarket or at restaurants is to categorize. And so for me, I think about it like there's ultra processed food or junk, you know, and I like to avoid the word food in that acronym or that sentence.
That's a good distinction.
Yes. And then there's food, right? And so when it comes to supplements versus drugs, the way that I would like to think about it is that there is supplements that, let's call them natural supplements, which are liver or curcumin or not manipulated, not heavily manipulated things, like things that actually occur in nature. And then a drug is a synthetic version or an equivalent mimicking what nature would normally produce. So I feel like there needs to be those two categories, because that would distinguish what came from a lab. And not saying that what came from a lab isn't useful or superior.
Well, that's a good point you bring up too. Yeah, the natural versus, to me, natural versus synthetic does not matter. It matters the molecular structure, right?
Mm.
And how it interacts with your cells, with your receptors, right? But yeah, that example I gave about, you know, the curcumin, right? Like, I would lean towards that being a drug, because you have to chemically modify that. And again, it doesn't mean I'm against it, right? But when you have a supplement, whether it's a concentrated extract or chemically modified to boost the absorption, either way, you are getting much more of that supplement into your body, into your cells. Yeah. That means everything that supplement does will be dialed up a lot more. So if you have a curcumin that gets absorbed, let's just say 10 times more, you're going to get 10 times more anti-inflammatory effects. You're going to get 10 times more iron depleting effects. You're going to get 10 times more copper depleting effects. You're going to get 10 times more DHT lowering effects. You're going to get, curcumin can also affect the enzymes that break down neurotransmitters. So you could get 10 times more mood boosting effects. But if you're a sensitive person, that mood boost turns into anxiety. I remember I took the Long Vita curcumin supplement. I took the regular curcumin with piperine, right? I felt pretty good on that. I tried this. They marketed it as 10,000 times more to the brain. Great, right? Even better. Maddie, I was an anxious wreck for like 16 hours. Like heart palpitations, like it was much. Do you see what I'm saying? You don't get to pick and choose. So if you have a supplement that does two things that are good for you, one thing that's working against you, you dial all them up 10x, right?
Mm.
That one negative can really stand out. And that's a good representation of how I look at supplements. You got to look at like a flywheel. It's not just, oh, mood boost, I need a mood boost. I need something that raises serotonin, that won't lower my iron, that'll do this, curious. You see kind of how I'm looking at this here. So like if people, I've had so many people that are, they have low iron, they're anemic. It's the curcumin supplement making them anemic. But guess what? My wife, she has hereditary hemochromatosis. So she's prone to genetically high iron. So guess what? She takes curcumin. So the same supplement I say, do not take because you have low iron, I will lean into that for you if you have high iron.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's interesting too, not many people realize that are going on a cancer journey that turmeric or curcumin has a contraindication with all sorts of cancer medications as well.
Oh yeah, yes. So yeah, there's curcumin, CBD can do that, berberine. There are so many of the powerhouse, very commonly utilized natural supplements. They affect mineral status, neurotransmitter levels in the brain. They affect the metabolism of medications. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think a concept that really flies under the radar is, you know, when I'll share this stuff on socials, I'll have some people say, oh, well, where's the study that shows taking curcumin on its own makes people anemic, right? And A, people don't really fund these studies, right? We have a lot of indirect evidence, but think about this. How many people take just one supplement? Not many.
Not many.
Right? So even though, you know, let's just say curcumin on its own can't bring someone from high iron to anemic, right? I'm not going to make that claim. But what if you're taking curcumin, quercetin, resveratrol? These are all iron chelators. So I've worked with people like this. They think they're taking resveratrol for mitochondrial health, quercetin for histamine, curcumin for inflammation. And guess what? That's all true. But when I look at it from my perspective, that person is on three supplements that raise adrenaline and three supplements that chelate iron, right?
So they're tired, they're anemic. Yeah.
And think about this. When we study supplement safety, we don't test multiple supplements together. And again, how many people take just one? So even though these natural supplements may be a weaker iron chelator than something that's a prescription, if you're taking three or four things that weakly or mildly pull iron out of the body, that adds up, right? But if you think about it, people, the evidence-based community that needs the studies for everything, we're never going to have those studies for the supplements that you're taking. We don't test the safety in a context that's realistic for most people taking them, which is kind of wild when you think about it. Again, going back to the unregulated Wild West.
It makes me think... there's got to be a GPT creation possible, you know, how in ChatGPT you can create GPTs to put in all of this information so that you can just type in, this is my supplement protocol. What am I chelating? You know,
let's just say that's up here right now, right? Got a lot of stuff I'm working on. But yeah, I mean, hey, that'd be the dream, right? Yeah. And, you know, what I can say about that, I've had a lot more clients in the past 6 months, they come to me, they have their raw data, they come to me with their ChatGPT plan. They plugged it in. Let me tell you guys right now, ChatGPT AI is changing the world, but it is not even close to being ready for truly nuanced health topics. I've tried to use it to build my own new genetic panels, and I'm like, I had to double check it. It was getting half the trends backwards. And you can even ask ChatGPT if it messes up, why are you messing this up? It's like, oh, sorry. It can be a yes man a lot, right? Like, so
I literally type into it now when I want feedback on something. I literally say, without being a yes man.
Yes.
I type that in.
Exactly. And it can sound all good if you don't know the underlying science, right? Mm-hmm. So if you guys are looking for general advice, hey, what are some foods that are low in saturated fat? Go ahead and utilize the AI. But if you think you could put your raw data into there and get truly accurate insights, it's not fully there yet, right? Hey, eventually build my own and do that, right? Once you have that proper training in there, right? But I see that a lot now, even with the diet plans as well, right? It can really not get these nuanced interactions because we need to remember these large language models, they're not actually thinking. They're pulling data that's already on the internet. And as I mentioned, no one studies these interactions, right? It's not written on labels. Like most of what I do is just from me seeing patterns with the hundreds of people I've worked with and a lot of indirect data. Oh, here's a mouse study that shows it. Here's an in vitro study. Oh, here's a huge, right? So it's connecting the dots. This information is not thoroughly proven on the internet. So ChatGPT can't pull that pattern and present it to you.
Yeah. And there's so many other factors in the human body, which are yet to be discovered that might be unique to the individual in front of you in the sense that, you know, they have their own unique genetic profile and all of that information. And I think it's a really good point to bring up, because about AI, and for people listening, because I saw a client yesterday who'd used AI for his workout plan, and he was like, I can't walk today. You know, and so, but it's a good point, because it's not thinking. It's just doing extremely rapid equations.
I mean, eventually, I think it'll be thinking smarter than we are, which is kind of scary to think about. I think we're going to get there. I mean, I don't know the exact timeline. I would say probably a few years, probably less with how things are going, right? But yeah, wild times.
I'm curious, sort of in a more general sense, acknowledging that the whole point of what you do is bio-individuality, but do you feel like there's 1, 2, 3 supplements that are mass-consumed by, you know, the Western world or the whole world that you think people should be checking in on?
You mean ones that people are taking that might be doing harm, or ones that think that are... Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, of course, I want to say my normal response, you know, it all depends on the person, right? But yeah, that being said, I think nowadays with the whole rise of MTHFR, well, it's always been there, but now it's everyone and their mom's talking about it, right? These methylated B vitamins. I see so many massive pages just saying everyone needs a methylated vitamin. Like, everyone needs this. 60% of the people have a mutation. There's no harm if you take it and you don't need it. That is so far from the truth. You know, these methylated B vitamins, the thinking is you have more methyl support to make more neurotransmitters, right? To help you make more of them so you feel better. These do that, but they also help you make adrenaline. So I have mutations in my genes that break down neurotransmitters. So I tell by how I talk, I'm an energetic guy, right? I'm go, go, go. I'm type A because I'm already brimming with higher levels of neurotransmitters. So when I found out about my MTHFR, I took a methylated supplement. I could only take, like, I broke out with a knife, like an eighth of it. I was so anxious taking it.
Yeah,
not because the B12 dosage is that high, because those methyl groups overstimulate me. So a lot of people that come to work with me, they're taking these supplement companies, again, they don't really even need to know supplements. They're giving crazy high doses of B12. And on top of that, it's all methylated. More methyl, the better, right? Because we all have MTHFR mutations. So if you're anxious, fearful, OCD type tendencies, can't sleep well, and you're taking a methylated B vitamin, I recommend stopping and see how you feel. I think that's a really, really big one that I've seen cause issues. And another two, they're related, that I talk about a lot, is the N-acetylcysteine, or the NAC, NAC, and glutathione.
NAC glutathione got so much promo during COVID as part of the natural solution, you know?
Yeah, and here's the thing. It definitely can help people, right? But as I mentioned, I'm sensitive to sulfur. NAC and glutathione are very rich in sulfur. So I call that functional medicine candy. Right. People recommend NAC, glutathione. Like, you have any liver issue, take it. Look at all the studies at what it helps with. You can't just look at studies. Okay, NAC can help with OCD. That's been shown in studies. But not everyone with OCD needs more NAC. Right? Too much sulfur can make OCD worse. So we need to think about the individual there. But I've had so many clients.
Because you're listening here, I can safely assume you're an absolute legend. And so if you want to keep this party going, I'd love to invite you over to follow me on Instagram or YouTube, both under the same name of The Real Weight Loss Coach. Over there, you'll find different content in both places. It's different. So heaps of bite-sized pieces of information. So if you want to learn lots of things really fast with a bit of a scroll, or simply you just prefer some visuals, then scroll over to The Real Weight Loss Coach on Instagram and YouTube. So see you there. Thank you. And let's get back into the episode.
Clients, they're feeling more anxious, or brain fog, headaches. It's the glutathione they're taking. They started taking it during a period of high stress or toxin exposure. They were never told to stop taking it. You know, what heals you is rarely what keeps you healthy. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, does this mean that every health practitioner needs to be a molecular pharmacologist?
You don't have to be. I think there should just be better training, and that's something I hope to pave the way with, right? I've had a lot of clients come to me from people that are functional medicine practitioners or naturopaths, and the harmful supplement interactions, medication interactions, are astounding. And then when I'll mention on social media how practitioners aren't trained properly on supplements, come out of the woodwork and they'll say, oh, we are trained on the supplements, but the training is more broad nutritional type things, or a couple interactions. I'm talking about a whole world of interactions that people aren't aware of because they're not trained in the molecular pharmacology. So the answer isn't you need to be one. I mean, my personal thinking is I think anyone should be able to access supplements on their own accord for their own body. But I think that if you're a healthcare professional, a quote-unquote expert. And if you are using your expertise to recommend supplements for another person, you should be required to have some sort of certification in how these supplements you're recommending work. I don't think that's far-fetched. I mean, you could be honest. Well, I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against that. And I think a lot of the education comes from a deficiency perspective, right? It's not about interactions. It's more like, oh, somebody has less of this, just add this to the pile. And one way that I like to think about the way that I deliver to clients is that there's a hierarchy of subtraction, substitution, and addition, but most education is focused on addition.
Yes.
It's just add, rather than, oh, we need to remove or we need to swap, you know? And so, yeah, I'd be up for that, man. I'd be up for taking your course, you know?
Yeah, it's coming in the pipeline. Yeah, I got some things I'm working on, but that's something I'm really passionate about because, hey, I'm not going to sit here and say the way I do this is the only way to do it and everyone else sucks. That's not what I'm saying at all, right? I offer a unique perspective that once you realize these interactions, people's random headaches, you could map them out with extreme precision. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a headache after I took my NAC and had eggs and garlic for breakfast because it's a sulfur bomb, right? But like you can't, when you don't know these patterns, it could be hard to pick those up.
Yeah, totally. Understanding the way that you think about compounds sort of leads me to that part of the conversation because I've heard you talk about it, which is psychedelics. And if all we think about is compounds in existence, then there's no distinction between illicit drugs or drugs or supplements. And I myself, and many of our regular listeners will know, I've sat in ceremony several times before with psilocybin and had the most profound experiences of my life. What's your experience in the psychedelic space and where does that sort of, you know, where does that play into what you do as in your job, like, and with clients?
Yeah. Before I touch on that, one other thing I wanted to add, I love what you said about the addition subtraction, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, someone signs up to work with me, they fill out their onboarding form. And this is usually, especially when I have people with headaches, sleep issues, or stress issues, I'll say, fill out your onboarding form. Gonna take a couple of weeks for the genetic testing, but let me see what stuff you're taking. And again, I'll see people that are anxious. They're on 3 to 5 supplements that all raise adrenaline by slowing down the breakdown. And I tell them, listen, let's just get rid of those for right now. Literally have changed people's lives just by removing the wrong things. And they're like, oh my God, like I'm like, we haven't even added the right things yet, right? All we did was remove the wrong things.
Yeah, before we get going to the other conversation, that makes me think like a lot of the modern world is chaotic and busy and could be argued that the human body wasn't designed for this level of stimulation. Yep. So on the back of that, a slow adrenaline breakdown is a part of what you see, because I see this a lot, is just people with diets plus lifestyles plus protocols that just burn out their nervous system because they've been doing it for so long.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, I think it goes back to by what heals you is really what keeps you healthy, right? Mm. Like even I fell into that trap. I was feeling under the weather for a little bit. I switched to my other multivitamin that has a little more direct methylation support because I needed it. I forgot to switch back. And after I felt it helped me get better quicker, but more energy, get through the sickness. And then maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, I'm like mid-morning, I'm like, I like can't even really sit down and do content. I just feel so rushed. I feel like kind of timid and scared. Mm. And I'm like, oh, I forgot. Like, I don't need that much methylation support anymore, right? I got through that hurdle. Let me dial it back down, right? But like, that's even me. I probably spent 10 days being unnecessarily anxious, which affected my, I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't like having wild panic attacks all day, like that first time I mentioned to you, right? But it definitely plays a role in that. And a lot of natural supplements raise adrenaline. And then you combine that with this obsession with the methylated vitamins. Now you're making a bunch more adrenaline, then you release it, but then you're plugging the drainage holes for the adrenaline to leave the synapses in your brain, right? Then if you don't know the pharmacology, this is a really important point I've been telling people that are anxious. You need to understand an external trigger, right? Like, is my life actually more stressful today? Or what is my internal biochemistry? So for example, if I could clone myself, Tyler 1, Tyler 2, they both get a really mean email and it stresses me out, right?
Yeah.
Tyler 1, nothing prior, he just gets the email. Tyler 2 took a quercetin supplement for his allergies and he had garlic and onions for lunch. So the quercetin blocked his breakdown of adrenaline. Then he had foods that can raise his adrenaline. Before he even gets the email, Tyler 2's adrenaline is already high. The spring, right? That I'm already all coiled up, right? Then the same life trigger happens, the same email. Tyler 2 is on DEFCON 5, right? I'm so much more stressed, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't know what the supplements are doing, you just think your life is that stressful, right? And, you know, a concept I talk about a lot too is if you're listening and you, so we have thought-driven anxiety, like, scary monster thought about the future, right? I'm going to fail this, that. Okay. But if you get physical anxiety, I call it, where your body feels triggered, but you don't have any negative conscious thought that's leading the way. That a lot of times can be from the wrong supplements or foods because it's not the thought raising your adrenaline, right? It's the other things, right? But if you spend enough time in that, I call it activated. I'm not anxious, I'm activated. Like if I take quercetin, and that's the one of the strongest ones that can really overstimulate people, another big one for COVID, right? So a lot of people were taking it. If I take quercetin and I just exist being activated, after 20, 30 minutes, eventually my subconscious will find a nasty, negative, fearful thought to attach to the feeling. And that's my new narrative, right? Because then it's like, you see what I'm saying? Like the body feels stressed. And then you eventually grab it out of your backpack, your subconscious, and you're like, oh, that's the narrative. That's, and now you're obsessing and worried and fearful about something when it was a supplement that made you enter that stress state to begin with, but now you're actually catastrophizing everything.
Yeah, that's such a good share because I think one of the things I encourage, and I imagine you would too, are symptom diaries because we need data on what you took, what you ate, if we're ever going to be able to figure out like, oh, what was the additive in the 17 different foods that you ate this week that perpetuated that thing? Because
It might not even be an additive,
totally,
right? Like,
totally.
Like when I say these things, people think, oh, like artificial pesticide that's added or artificial dye. No, like you could eat the highest quality farm raised eggs ever. Eggs have a good bit of sulfur regardless. So it doesn't matter the quality. We're talking about naturally occurring compounds. Additives can be a factor for sure. Preservatives and stuff, definitely. But even the most pristine organic foods, and this is why when I work with people, most of them are eating all organic. They're doing all the right things. But I'm like, you're eating all this sulfur for dinner and your mind is racing at night. And people will tell me, Doc, you're kind of nuts. You're telling me it's the garlic and onions or Brussels sprouts doing this? And I'm like, listen, I'm not saying that they are the cause. We need to shift our thinking from what is the cause to what is a contributor. And we need to stack as many contributors. It's like people say death by 1,000 paper cuts. Yeah. I like to say what I do is victory by 1,000 small wins. Like that one supplement for your vitamin D pathway, throwing out a random number, that may help you 7%. Then we get rid of the garlic and onions. I just keep using that example, but around dinner time, that helps you another 4%, right? And then over time, that's how we get these big changes because they're all seemingly minor things, but when you align them properly, right? Like, give you another example for like histamine. You wake up in the morning. How many people wake up in the morning? They have a cup of black coffee. They have a shot of apple cider vinegar. They go to the gym fasted. Caffeine high in histamine. Vinegar high in histamine. Exercise releases histamine. That's normal physiological. You're not going to get rid of that, right? I even had a client I remember would do that. Then he would have a protein kombucha drink after he trained. High histamine. Right. No wonder why you feel like you're going to pass out. You're wired, but tired, headache. You feel so spacey and out of it. You just histamine bomb. You exercise, histamine bomb. But again, you think you're doing all the right things because they're healthy. But again, the perspective on the pathways.
This conversation is good as a reminder to remember that food, it runs this extraordinarily complex body and physiology that we've got. And so obviously it has enormous power. And so the wrong power in the wrong spot for the wrong person.
Exactly.
You know, is a catastrophe, you know, but it's really easy to forget that, oh, my body is super complex and garlic and onion help run that, you know.
Well, it's funny. I'll even sometimes, if I'm feeling a little tired and I'm at like a networking thing, I'll sometimes have the garlic and onions to boost me up a bit. It can go both ways, right? And, you know, you people listening now, if you eat a lot of garlic and onions or broccoli, Brussels sprouts, or even supplements, alpha lipoic acid, sulforaphane, glutathione, NAC, MSM, if you take these and you don't feel great, try removing them for a day or two and see how you feel. I think it's always telling, like when I post about this, you'll have half the comments being like, this is a bunch of crap, you're fear mongering. This doesn't matter. Then the other half of the comments are like, oh my God, this changed my life. Or, oh my God, I couldn't connect the dots. And just goes to show how incredibly different everyone is.
Yeah, totally. Before we finish, let's bounce into that psychedelic conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so how has that played a role in your life and experience, and how do you use that with clients?
Yeah. So, you know, psychedelics have played a huge role in, you know, my development as a person and, you know, the mind expansion, you know, the creativity aspect and, you know, even, you know, I think being able to observe your own consciousness from another perspective, right? I feel like with neuroplasticity, right? The more you think a certain pathway, the stronger it gets. So mm-hmm. if you're used to thinking, we'll say this way your whole life, right? This line of thinking your whole life, it gets very strong. You have a certain worldview about yourself, what you're capable of, your place in the world. Mm-hmm. That gets very strengthened. When you take some of these substances, medicines, right? The better word, medicines, it shifts. Now, for temporarily, you're thinking this way, right? Mm. And you're able to realize that these stories you tell yourself, these narratives you tell yourself, they're just stories. You could rewrite that narrative, right? So they played a massive role in my development as a person. I'm a big advocate. You know, there's certain genetics that can help figure out who would respond better to a microdose of psilocybin mushrooms versus LSD versus ketamine. You know, I obviously can't, you know, source or supply these for people, right? It's all, you know, it's can't do any of that. No one come after me, right? But, you know, I get a lot more people that are curious about that, right? Like LSD, for example, acts on the histamine system. So if you're histamine sensitive, you're probably going to get a lot of headaches if you try to microdose. That's what I noticed. I looked that up. I'm like, okay, boom, checks out, makes perfect sense, right? But, you know, I think there's definitely some benefit to just eating some mushrooms with buddies and giggling for a couple of hours. But I think, you know, the ceremonial settings, like you mentioned, proper integration, right? I'm excited to see where the space goes, but I'm also a little concerned, you know, how much is the magic going to get washed away by trying to do it clinically, you know, in an office
with man.
People in white coats. And on one side, I get it. Going that route makes it so much more accessible and affordable for people, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think they approve MDMA in Australia and like, I think it's like thousands and thousands of dollars for like a session or two, right? Like, yeah. But you could bring that cost down. It gets to more people. It also loses some of that intrinsic magic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm completely agree with you. And I'm sort of concerned about the medicalization of that world. And I know that it's not very scientific to talk about magic and wisdom, but like
I always say magic is just science that hasn't been proven yet. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, hey, gravity, right? Like flying bird, right? Like like if man didn't see birds flying in the air, would we have ever tried to fly, right? Like think about that. If we didn't see all the birds doing that, right? And that seemed like magic till we figured that out, right? So, I mean, as logical as I am as a scientist with the things I've experienced and seen and this and that, like, I think there's absolutely some extrasensory woo-woo energy that's beyond what science can, you know, detect currently. I think some people are genetically sensitive to, quote, tapping into source, we may call it, right? People that are the energy workers, the clairvoyants, the psychics, the highly sensitive individuals, right? Certain genetics allow certain people to tap in more easily. And then on the flip side, if you're less tapped in, a lot of these same mutations are linked to depression, right? So if your body is genetically insensitive to, let's call it source, low mood depression. If you're hypersensitive, energy workers, healers, also, I believe schizophrenia as well. There's a lot of similarities here between these things.
Yeah, I love that you're sharing all this because it's nice to have a conversation with a fellow scientist, if you like, that also can lean into this world without just writing it off.
Once you experience some of these things, right? And again, you know, you want to do them in the right settings, these types of things. You want to be safe with it. But, you know, the benefits are undeniable, even in the trials that are being done, right? And I think as time goes by, like, they're going to be trying to create the psychedelics that give you the neural changes without the psychoactive effects. And I'm curious what you think about that. Like, I guess the non-psychoactive synthetic psychedelic derivatives.
I mean, sure, there's probably some benefit, but I think the magic is part of the healing, is part of the rewriting, you know? Yeah. And if I think about my experiences, like even just looking around the room and seeing the beauty in plain things, or like the crazy colors that you see and you perceive are going on, it's like it gives you this appreciation for life and this gratitude for existence. And some people might be able to tap into that going to church, you know, or in meditation with no substance, you know, that's totally fine. But that magic or perspective shift that happens in the visual experience, I think, is part of the rewriting and the healing.
Yeah. Yeah. I could not agree more. What I like to say is the deeper rooted the trauma is subconsciously, right?
Mm. Yeah.
The greater the need for the psychoactive state. Right? Like some people can microdose and you get some of these neurotransmitter changes and they're good, right? But if you have really bad PTSD, psychological trauma, you're going to need to go under the hood of the car and really, you know, dig up in there and kind of unearth some of these things.
For anybody that's like, man, Tyler is awesome, I want to get into his world, like, where can we send people? Where are they going to go online?
Yeah, so www.drtylerpanzner.com. P-A-N-Z-N-E-R. There's like an N sandwich around the Z. Sometimes people forget the second N. But yeah, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn. And I'm just really on a mission to add that nuance in the oversaturated health world where everyone's trying to sell you something, to just help you make more informed health decisions around your body, whether it's genetics, supplements, mindset, you know, just really here to be of service and educate. And as I mentioned, you know, eventually be training other practitioners to be able to have this toolkit in their arsenal. I'm just really all about ending unnecessary suffering. And I see a lot of it that's unfortunately perpetuated a lot by just the sensationalism with supplements nowadays and TikTok shop and all these different things. Just because a supplement helps with your label or diagnosis, it helps with bloating, or it helps with headaches, does not mean that's going to help you. It may not work. It might work. It might make you feel worse, right? But if you don't know what's going on, again, you may live your life thinking something's really wrong with you and not even think it's the supplement you started taking, or maybe the supplement you've been taking for a while now that no longer serves you, but it worked for you initially. So you just keep going along with it and you don't even second guess it.
Yeah, sweet, man. I'll put down your links down in the show notes below. So for anybody listening, whichever platform you're on, scroll down, show notes, captions, all that kind of stuff. Tyler's links will be in there. And to take us out, we're going to do our little real talk segment. So you ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Question one. What's something that you believe now that made you laugh 10 years ago?
I think that repressed emotions, unspoken words, or dysregulated nervous system, I think is as important, if not more important, than diet or exercise for overall health and disease prevention. I think not speaking your truth to people, holding resentment, holding a grudge, it's literally poison for your cells. It flips all those wrong genes on and off, this or that. Yeah, I mean, I'm just getting really fascinated with this. There's studies showing people that don't speak their truth, it's linked to depression, anxiety. Women are like 5 times more likely to die if they don't share their feelings with their significant other than those that don't. The data is really, really wild. And back then, I was just like, yeah, you just eat decent, train like a meathead, you know, 10 years ago, and that's all it's about. But that would make me laugh back then, that you got to be so regulated and you want to make sure you air everything out that's on your mind.
Man, good answer. Next one is, what's one habit you'd be embarrassed to admit that you still have?
Probably that I'm wearing my blue blockers, but I am.
Me too.
I'm saying in the evening, not right now, but in the evenings, I am on my phone at night. A lot of times for me, once the hustle bustle of the day is over, that's when a lot of my flow creative ideas can come. And hey, I have the red light filter, the red blue light blockers on, so I'm protected from that. I'm still on my phone, usually on ChatGPT, kind of trying to learn. I have a new idea, right? So again, I'm trying to protect myself from the blue light, but I am on my phone most nights, pretty much leading up right to bed. And I sleep good, but probably could be better if I just had some screen free time right before bed. So that's my guilty pleasure.
What's one supplement, habit, or wellness trend that you think is overhyped?
I think all of them can be overhyped if it's not matched up for you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that's kind of like a catch-all, right? But like, even like cold plunges, certain genetics can make people have a slower metabolism from it or have heightened cortisol responses from it. You know, red light therapy, it causes oxidative stress in your body. That's what it does. And we know that too much of it can be bad. Certain mutations can make your antioxidant system not work as well. We know these are linked to inflammatory issues. But if you overdo the red light therapy, you could feel a lot worse due to that. You know, I mentioned the glutathione or even the, you heard of like the senolytics, like the, they get rid of the zombie cells in your body and stuff. Most of those supplements also raise adrenaline in the body. I can't touch them. I'm so sensitive to them, right? So I think everything can be overhyped if it's something that your body doesn't need.
What's a rabbit hole topic you think more people should explore?
Microplastics. Mm, I think people, I think a lot of people are waking up to microplastics. A lot of people hear about you don't want to microwave plastic containers. People may hear about the tea bags, like putting a tea bag in hot liquid, but furniture, rugs, the more you walk on the rug, it's releasing. I got all woolen cotton rugs in our house, right? The more you're moving on that, the more it's into the air. There's been more and more studies. Virtually every type of biological fluid in humans, in every organ, there's microplastics. We're finding them everywhere. We're even finding them in the stool of newborn babies. So we even know that newborn children have significant levels of microplastics in their poop. I think it's called, I forgot what's it called. It's called meconium. Meconium's the word for like that liquidy stool, like from a newborn. It's already in there. So it's the parents are passing that on, or the mother is passing that on to her child. A big study came out that Alzheimer's disease, people with Alzheimer's disease had 7 times more microplastics in their brain than people without. Microplastics are 30% more concentrated in the brain than any other organ in the body. And this really blew my mind. The amount of plastic in the brain of someone with Alzheimer's disease was the same as much as like a spoon from a cafeteria. So imagine a whole spoon worth of plastic in your brain throughout your life. So again, people are aware of, you know, some of the major exposure routes, right? But it's so much more pervasive than people think. And I really think as time goes by, this is going to be the number one epidemic affecting humans. And for you guys listening, you know, studies have shown that fiber intake, beta-glucans, chitosan, that's a type of fiber from crustacean shells. It's in fungi as well. Chlorella. Those are some that have data at helping to pull out microplastics, or chlorella has been shown to pull microplastics out of aquatic environments. So there's no data that in humans it pulls it out. But if you read between the lines, if chlorella grows in water, it pulls out the microplastics. So kind of reading between the lines a bit, but up to date, those are the real natural ways we have to kind of combat that.
Great answer. The next one is, in 20 years from now, what do you want to be known for?
As someone that does primarily coaching right now, when it's all said and done, well, I won't be done in 20 years, but I want to be known as an educator more than a coach, more so one to many. And I want to be known as, listen, I'm not the first guy to use genetics for personalized health, far from it, right? But I do think I want to be known for playing a large role in making it more palatable, right? Bringing it down, making it understandable and exciting for the average person to understand, while also educating other doctors and healthcare professionals. I mean, a lot of doctors were trained on, they know what genetics are, but they have no idea what any of this means, right? Because it's so out of reach. It's so overwhelming. So finding a way to keep the nuanced detail, but make it more palatable for people to really connect the world to this life-changing precision.
And our final question is, if everything you've ever said was deleted, what's one sentence that you'd want to leave people with?
Specialists see symptoms. Coaches see the person, but your genetics reveals the blueprint to guide it all.
Fantastic, man. It's been so good having you here on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. This was awesome. I hope all you guys here learned a nice bit of info here. And yeah, really excited to see where the future goes. You know, I think I'm just excited to see the world. I think the world's waking up in a lot of ways to this more holistic side of stuff and realizing, wow, this stuff just really does make sense. And the goal is not to completely dismantle big pharma and get rid of all the doctors, all prescription medications. There's a time and place for most of these things, not all of them, but I think learning to have more balance between the yin and the yang on each side.
Yeah, I feel that. But thanks, man, for being here. And maybe we'll do another one in the future because I think this was awesome. And,
would love to.
We'll catch you soon. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learned anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify every time an episode comes out. And inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.